Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. I'm so glad you're tuning in for another episode. Today's conversation is with Janelle Carruthers, who is the Chief Development Officer at Hancock County, Mississippi Port and Harbor Commission. You'll pick up right away that Janelle is an extremely dedicated professional who energetically leads her team, and she has keen insights on the industry. She talks today about emotional intelligence, how she, as a self-described deal chaser, cultivated deal discipline, and how she continues to work on sharing with her community the story behind the work that goes into each deal that's announced. Janelle is recognized as one of North America's top 50 economic developers, and she has a lot of enlightening things to say today. So let's listen in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I'm really excited because I'm here today with Janelle Carruthers, who is the Chief Development Officer at Hancock County, Mississippi Port and Harbor Commission. It's a long one, but I feel like that's the deal in economic development. We all work at organizations with really long names. But Janelle, I really would love to really dive into first things first. And that is, how did you get into economic development? Maybe what was your plan when you went to college? And how did you get to where you are right now?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me today. I originally went to the University of Southern Mississippi with the intention of going to law school. I wanted to go into maritime law. And I had a really great political geography professor, and I was going abroad to study at a foreign university, a language there. And he handed me his card at the end of the semester, and he said, if you ever want to get your graduate degree, I'm the Dean of Economic Development here at USM, and we would love to have you. And so I kept that card throughout my entire travels for the next 8 months. And as soon as I got back, I called him and said, I'm 100% down. I have a year left. What can I do to get in this field? And so I'm one of the few that I intentionally went into economic development. So I had my international business undergrad and then a Master of Science in Economic Development.
That's really awesome. Now, you really intentionally went into economic development. Do you feel that that has given you an advantage or given you a different perspective than most economic developers in the industry?
You know, a lot of people fall into the field by accident or by out of necessity, perhaps. The fact that I went in very intentionally, I think, does give me a little different perspective on it. I knew going in, learning about the different types of economic development organizations, I definitely wanted to go into heavy industrial. That was, you know, the genre I wanted to be in. Something where it was more EDO-like and less chamber-like.
I really think that's interesting because I think about myself in the economic development industry, and it was a 100% almost accidental that I fell into the organization where I'm at. So for you to go into the industry, go into your career, knowing the things that took me probably 2 years to learn through my work, that's really different. That's really exciting.
Well, and that's something I would definitely give to anyone that's up and coming or even people that are currently in the field. Just be very intentional. I mean, set some paths for success and what it looks like for yourself, your profession, your career. I mean, I knew that I wanted to go through the program. I wanted to get an internship and I wanted a job in economic development. And everything I did every single day drove me towards those goals. If it didn't, then I had discipline enough not to engage myself in it.
So. Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into one of the questions I had already planned on asking you. And that's when you think about the types of trainings and skills that are needed in our profession, and especially for your particular role in economic development, what is your strongest skill personally? And like, how does that play into your leadership and your daily life at work? And why do you think it's such an important skill to have?
I would say emotional intelligence and deal discipline those can help you throughout every single field, including your personal and professional relationships. But I was having, so I do deal negotiation here. We run an airport, we run a railroad, and we also run a port in addition to being an economic development agency for the county. So I'm negotiating with Fortune 500 companies that are foreign, you know, they're run by foreign governments or foreign national entities. And one of the things I found, I would take either rejection or deal negotiations very personally. And I went and I was having a kind of complaining session with my now mentor, Bill Cork. And he said, Janelle, you're having an emotional reaction. You need to go calm down, collect yourself, and then come back to this tomorrow. Because I was taking it too personally. It wasn't. And I was letting that affect how I acted, you know, not only on behalf of my organization, but also reflected in the deal. So that's one of the things that, you know, it's invaluable. Once you can get that discipline down, then you can really feel you have more control in every situation.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important skill, like you said, to have regardless, right? It's a life skill to have that emotional intelligence. But you sound like you have a really incredible awareness of self prompted by that situation where you can really step outside yourself and see, like, I am taking things personal, but this is not a personal, you know, this is not a reflection of me. And I think that's really refreshing to hear. And it's really important in our industry because there are, you know, for every win that we have in the economic development industry, there's going to be more losses, more than likely.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. And so one of the things I think, you know, we put out press releases and people say, like, what have you done for the community? You know, the high points, right? But you don't really focus on those. Like, you don't ever, like, once you hit that point of success or a win, then you're always looking for the next one. How can I make my board happy? How can I make politicians happy? How can I make, you know, my grandmother happy and make people proud of our community? But really stopping and thinking of, you know, what that does for you professionally and personally. So for instance, one time I had someone I really respected. He wasn't actually in my organization, but he led another organization I worked with a lot regionally. And he replied to something I'd sent him with, "You're the best." And that was the absolute feedback I needed right then. And it was so short. I'm sure he didn't think anything about it. But the fact that I was so excited by that comment made me really aware that it's something my boss would tell me all the time or my team would tell me, but I internalized that external feedback a lot better than I did internal. So it made me really appreciate, you know, when people do tell me things, especially internally, to really stop and think about it and thank them for the feedback.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like internally, it's much easier for us to see the things that we're working on, but for you to get feedback like that externally, it's not that it's more meaningful, but it does weigh heavier in your brain when you have an outsider saying, like, you're doing good work. You are the best. Like, thank you for doing the things that you're doing.
But especially when you chase deals for 7 years, you know, I mean, how that's one of the things, and especially managing a team, I see how to keep people continually motivated when you're chasing these projects for the better part of a decade. Mm-hmm. And then once you win them, you're like, oh, that was excruciating.
Yeah, well, and that's the hard thing about economic development is, one, outside of our industry, a lot of people, even people we work closely with, like elected leaders and, you know, community leaders, stakeholders, a lot of people don't actually understand economic development. So when you chase deals for 7 years, that's 7 years of work you have done. But the only thing the outside sees is like, oh, cool, we got this really big new project. And it's really hard. How do you handle like telling that story of, you know, yes, this is a high point, but like that's the tip of the iceberg. There's an enormous, unthinkable amount of work that went into that.
So this is something I'm definitely trying to work on. I think Gantt charts and explaining to your board and politicians the different timelines. As most people know, when you get a project, the timeline is always yesterday or tomorrow or, you know, the next month. But in reality, that it doesn't happen that way. So letting people know that, you know, this is when we first started communication, a due diligence period or a down select period, and then negotiations. I mean, those take months themselves until you finally get to a point where you're doing a groundbreaking or ribbon cutting.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no good answer because I know from talking to so many different economic developers, it is something that a lot of people do struggle with, is like telling that story. How do we show people that this is, that there's a lot of work involved with the things that, you know, get their 15 seconds of notification in the media. So
one of the things I think helps is having deal discipline. So we've started turning down projects more so than ever. If we know it's not a good fit for the consultant or the company, for our community or vice versa, we're just going to go ahead and lay that out there. If I know they're looking for something cheap and we have revenue requirements coming from our board and politicians and it's not going to work out, I'm now comfortable enough to be blunt where we can just come to terms, you know, rules of engagement. I will always say, please just don't do this because you like me as a person.
Yeah.
Do it because it works for you. You're fine to tell me it's not going to work. You know, you can get out at any point of the deal. I don't want you to think you put me through too much due diligence or something. Whenever we need to cut ties, let's just do it. And I'll tell them from my end too, it's the same.
I love that, Janelle. I think that that is a characteristic that comes with time, but it also is a curated skill to have that. You have to really want to be that transparent and that honest. So how did you get there? How did you start working on that?
Well, I started people pleasing as any woman in the South would do. And then eventually I would ask site selectors or companies that came through to rank me. Tell me about your other sites. What do we have better or less? I've done some really incredible trainings, Carol Johnson, Leonard Atlas sales trainings, a lot of negotiation, reading books. There's one about hostage negotiation that applies to my everyday life and career. But, you know, once you know where you are in the deal, then, you know, all bets are off because you can be transparent. You know what works, you know what doesn't work. And there's a mutual respect that comes with that. I mean, if they know you're a competent counterparty, then it's very easy on their side to determine if your site fits or if your community fits.
That's awesome. I'm going to shift gears just a little bit to talk a little bit about the past year. So the last 12 months, you know, we're almost exactly to the day of the world shutting down last year. So, and for a lot of people that brought a lot of not just professional, but personal challenges as well. You know, for some people, they had to start working from home while their children were at home, doing school at home, like the whole, your whole entire life was at home. So I'm curious, what was your biggest personal challenge during this time? And how have you navigated through that?
My biggest personal challenge, so personal or professional? Personal?
Whatever you would like to answer with, because I think over the last year, a lot of those professional challenges turned into personal ones because we were at home so much.
So one of the things professionally we dealt with was we fund ourselves. We make revenue via our railroad operations, our airport, and our industrial park. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to secure that revenue for contractual purposes so we could have a clear and definite future of where we stood financially looking out. Mm-hmm. So one of the things during the pandemic, we renegotiated all of our antiquated contracts, opened them up. They were more or less weak, per se, brought them up to market rate, all at least 3-year deals. So wow. We knew whatever happened, we were financially secure. Now, a lot of that's attributed to our railroad. We were lucky enough, we're very heavy manufacturing and defense-based here. So we actually did not see a downturn. But then in a leadership position in the organization, we also had to ensure the safety of our employees, the safety mm-hmm. of their families, and then also continuing operations through a worldwide pandemic where everyone else was shutting down.
Yeah.
You know, how do you justify that to your employees and make them feel that what we're doing is part of a bigger piece of the world economy? So while everyone else is sitting at home, you know, planes are going to keep landing and trains are going to keep running and that they're part of that bigger picture.
So how did you communicate that with your team? Because emotional intelligence is a strength of yours. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing, but I am also pretty certain that you had to draw on that strength a lot in order to communicate with your team while you kept working throughout the pandemic.
I think we've gone into and luckily we're on the other side of it, but we had gone into where you had feedback and reviews and a lot of it was negative, right? So you would get scored maybe annually, or you would get dinged if you did something wrong. And we had to pivot that to more of a cheerleader sense, especially within our teams and some of our transportation staff, that they really were essential. I mean, this is something you saw across the board, but also making sure they balance their family life as well. So if they were going to come out and work, especially in a pandemic, if they were going to guarantee us days, we could do things like be more flexible around their schedules or guarantee them certain hours that were able to get them to a price point that they needed to, you know, feel that they were being compensated properly and such.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are hard conversations to have, especially as a point leader, where you have to juggle, like, we have to get these things done, but also we are living in a pandemic, in a worldwide global pandemic. Yeah.
And then that sense of self. So even if you want to go to a party or see somebody else, you know, just making sure that you're protecting your coworkers when you get back to work, that you're using, you know, common sense practices and making sure it's just a safe environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's been really hard, and it's going to continue to be hard because we're seeing so many people. There's become such a divide between it, right? So it's you're either in this camp or in this camp, and it seems like nobody is able to be in more in the center, because of social media, because of opinions, because of politicization of everything. So that's difficult, and I really like that you you sound like you were supportive, because people do need to see other people. People do need to be social. Humans are social beings, but as long as they are taking precautions when coming back to work, they also have to be considerate of other humans, especially ones that they work closely with.
Definitely. And then personally, just, I think everyone probably had anxiety, you know, the uncertainty of the future. So I really doubled down and made sure that I was running, working out, taking care of my physical health. So mentally I could still be kind of peak performance, you know, given the world essentially shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just actually addressed one of the questions of what you did to personally stay sharp. But I want to ask, and we'll end on this question. You sound like you are so in tune with, and I can tell that you are a powerhouse in your organization. You're in tune with yourself, with your mental capacities, and with the things you need to be for your team. How do you invest in your professional growth? You know, that development. How do you ensure that you're pouring into your own cup so that it's full enough to pour into others?
I have an array of mentors that I make sure that I contact each month, whether it's phone calls, lunch, dinner, even if I need to vent or complain, someone to kind of slap me back into place and tell me that it's not as bad as I think. So I really found if you have the right people, it's like a cheat code, right? So if you get people from each aspect of your industry at different levels, you know, some retired, some that are still active in the profession, some that are your peers, you'll always have people to call on that can give you advice and make you better, as well as just looking out through kind of professional development books and things. Like right now I'm reading Tribe of Mentors and it's huge. So I listen to podcasts when I run, and they're usually professional podcasts or economic development podcasts, stuff like that. So
that's really awesome. When we first started this interview, you had some advice for emerging leaders or people that are just coming up in the profession. Is there anything else you want to add for advice that you might have for people that are, you know, looking to grow more in their economic development career?
So as you know, in economic development, we are partiers. We have dinner, socials, everything. Before I went to each conference, I would make my minimally acceptable outcomes. I do the same thing when taking meetings. I don't take meetings without agendas, things like that. So I always had a roster of people I wanted to speak with personally, talk to, get a few questions out of, and they were never around at these socials. So I'm sitting there, it's 8 p.m., you know, people are gathered by the bar. None of the people I want to talk to are there, not one. My friend, you know, some of my friends, colleagues are there. So what I found, if you get up at, well, I get up very early anyway, but hit the breakfast bar, and usually that's where you'll find the most successful people. Not saying you can't do both, but, you know, you have to pick. You can't be all things. So gyms, whenever we have conferences or meetings with site selection consultants and stuff, usually early morning, you'll see all of the key players in there, and then as well as early morning meetings. So show up, be seen, engage. But just make sure that you're hitting, you know, you have clear targets of what you want to do and then meet those.
I love it. Janelle, you are, you've been really interesting to talk to. I have learned a lot, and I love how dedicated you are to your role, to your region, and to growing yourself, but also pouring into others. So thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. And I'm so excited for you that you are recognized as one of North America's top 50 economic developers this year, because after talking to you, I just know that this is deserved 10 times over. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate everything y'all do at Consultant Connect as well.
Thank you. Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.